SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Very good Friday, race fans. Sirius 162 XM 207 Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at the website as well, stevebick.com. Let me fix the. There we go. I was getting kind of a low return for good reason. Dialed down. Big weekend, obviously, on tap. And really, you know what? I think we're better off with Santa Anita moved to Sunday. It spreads things out nicely. So not for our purposes per se, but for betting purposes, certainly on Sunday and into tomorrow, full dance card. And full dance card here in terms of conversation. Give you a quick synopsis. I actually can fold the synopsis from yesterday in with visitors. There are Fairgrounds, a couple of points, and Gulfstream points, which I can do when we're joined by Marcus Hirsch and by Mike Welch. And in fact, we've got the Daily Racing Form correspondents. Wire to wire. We'll talk to Brad Free in about a half an hour again and dive into the Sunday card. Marcus Hirsch is going to join us right after Nick Tamaro. Nick's going to join us here right off the opening. And then Dave Grenning in hour two. We'll do a little bit of Florida with Dave because he's here obviously covering, but he's also covering everything back at Aqueduct. The Gotham card and the three other stakes, and they're good. Good late pick five. So Grenning in hour two and Welsh to kick off hour three. We'll check in with Hammer. We'll reach out for Rich Eng later and get Rich maybe a couple of thoughts about Santa Anita. And, you know, the Santa Anita thing, I know people, I see people, you know, grousing. As Hammer explained, six turf races on that card. There was no point if you're going to have six. What are you going to do? You know, they're going to tear the course up to pieces, and so it makes perfect sense. Scully, of course, we'll get to. Caton Bradar is going to be here. We somehow missed Caton on the first Florida trip, so we'll get Caton aboard. Seth is going to come back and co-pilot the second half of the show as soon as he gets done on TV, Capital OTB. And first reminder, Seth and I tomorrow, 8 o'clock on Capital OTB. And, of course, you can watch it, Capital OTB on their YouTube channel and CapitalOTB.com. Because, you know, what's more fun than me and Seth, you know, bright early on Saturday morning? That's the way to start your weekend, with a mimosa and with Merrow and Bick. it'll be the usual hijinks, I promise. Let me get to Nick Tamaro right away, because we really don't have margin for error this morning. Not to say that we won't, you know, run aground on the way, but here we go. Let's talk to Nick, and I'm anxious for Nick's take on New York, obviously, and it is an all stakes cross country, because the two Arkansas bred races are the other two. Races along with the last three stakes in New York. Let me say good morning, Nick Tamaro.
Good morning, Steve. How you doing?
Excellent. No time to waste, Nick, and I know you got a busy day too. Quick thoughts on Timberlake last week?
I thought Timberlake ran well. You know what's funny? And I was thinking about this the other day as I let all of the various things that flow through my brain that would probably frighten everyone go, as far as racing goes. But, you know, so Timberlake beats a suspect field, gets a 93 buyer speed figure, and everybody's talking about distance limitations and all the various issues they have with him. And a week before, we anointed Sierra Leone, who, granted, ran, and this might be not a completely fair comparison, but we were all anointing Sierra Leone for running a 90 figure in the slop, beating what looked at least on paper to be a better field. My point with all of it is that you can't have knee-jerk reactions to these races, and you can't start to make proclamations on distance limitations until we really seen them go 9 furlongs. Nothing about Timberlake to me last week made it look like he wasn't going to get another furlong and a half. Now, that could totally change, right? It could be a faster-paced race in the Bluegrass or the Arkansas Derby, wherever he surfaces. But I think it's important to note at this point that he at least was able to duplicate his prior year form, and that's a big thing from a newly turned three-year-old. So the fact that he was able to do that, I'd give him a lot of credit for it. Yeah, he didn't beat the most spectacular field, no doubt about it. And I'm not sure how many of those horses are even Indiana Derby animals, let alone Kentucky Derby. So I wouldn't go out of my way to you know, make a big bet on him in any kind of future pool. But, I mean, to me, he seems like one of the five biggest contenders right now.
Agreed, and that's one of the fun aspects of these, you know, particularly of the first half of, you know, the prep season is trying to interpret, you know, these intermediate races. So that's a fair enough assessment, and we'll check in obviously with Marcus, and yesterday had Brad Free do some Derby watch conversation. Dave Aragona weighed in, so. We've got an exciting round, obviously, of this weekend, Nick. And let's go right to the nightcap in New York tomorrow. Your Gotham thoughts.
Yeah, fun race. You know, this is the second year in a row that Gotham's had a giant field. And, you know, I mean, look, the thing that you have to acknowledge from the top is a lot of us had been waiting for Deterministic to run back based on the race that he ran on debut at Saratoga. And, you know, it's a pretty tough objective that Christoph is bringing him back in. But, you know, I thought it was pretty clear from that race, Steve, that this horse could be just about anything. You know, winning like he did first time out for that barn against what looked like a decent enough field. Now that we're seeing it shake out a little bit, it was an okay field. The ownership of Deterministic, actually part of it, bought into the second place finisher who came back and underperformed in his next start. But still, this is a horse that it looks like he's probably got a ton of upside. So it's really interesting to see him back. I don't have any issue with Just a Touch being a pretty solid favorite. This is a horse with a nice pedigree, and he was an impressive winner on debut. Did a very soft trip in there. Remind you a little bit of the horse that was favored from Brad Cox last year that actually ran very well. But couldn't get the job done, obviously, because it was a fast pace. It feels like it's going to be a fast pace again. Based on the track profile, I have to bet Lightline in this race because I felt like he was squarely against it the entire way. He was wide. He lost contact with him a little bit on the turn. He started rallying again. That was a good rail, and it certainly upgraded the performance of El Grande O. And so Lightline is the horse that I'm going to pick. I'd say from a multi-race perspective, I mean, you're casting about as wide a net here as you can because it looks like a very wide-open race. Again, it looks like a race that will have plenty of speed with Slider and Maximus Meridius. Facenda should be forwardly placed. El Grande O is cutting back, but he's got a ton of natural speed, and Just a Touch is plenty quick himself. So it feels like they'll go at a frenetic clip early, and that should set the table for a horse coming from off it like Lightline.
Lightline, 8-1. The one horse you didn't mention that I'm very interested in is Capital Idea.
Yep, don't blame you. You know, always a little skeptical of big blowout wins on the slot, but you know, this is a horse that showed plenty on debut, backed it up with a good effort at second asking, came back and worked a bullet. So, I mean, yeah, it looks as if it's all systems go for him. He's the other Christoph Clement runner in the field, and I don't have a big argument against him whatsoever. You know, just a matter of how Trevor's going to work out the trip coming from off of it. But, you know, one thing you know you're going to get with Trevor is that if there's any advantage to being in a certain part of the racetrack, he's going to be the first to notice it. So if it's a situation where you want to be outside, which kind of felt like that was the case yesterday, you know, remains to be seen today. But this horse will definitely get the best of it in that respect.
All right, back it up. Tom Fool goes as the ninth. Basically, I don't know, Super Chow. You key off a Super Chow and go from there.
Yep, I guess so, right? I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what Super Chow does with Rodney, because Jose Lozcano is such a great fit for Rodney, and it's no coincidence that all of his best races have been when Jose's been in the irons. And really the difference is that Jose just lets this horse run, and he wants to go fast. He wants to go fast for as far as he can. Six furlongs is obviously right in his wheelhouse. That's why five of his nine wins have come at this trip. He loves Aqueduct. That Safe Florida Sandy was an excellent effort. I think you have to use a pace-influenced speed figure to get the full picture of how well he ran that day. Ben, I mean, if you're a Timeform US user, he was 16 to 19 points faster at the first 2 points of call in the Safe Florida Sandy than Super Chow was in the Toboggan. So I'm not going to be surprised if Rodney, with that quick first step, I'm not going to be surprised if he clears this field, puts Super Chow in more of a stalking spot where I don't necessarily think he's uncomfortable. I do think Super Chow had the best of it last time, being kind of isolated on the front end. I thought the horse that you wanted to upgrade a little bit out of there and give an opportunity to maybe surprise was Maniwa. Mm-hmm. Felt like Maniwa was a horse that ran credibly. I think Will Walden is an up-and-coming trainer. I've felt like a lot of the horses I see from his barn are running well consistently, and he's going to be the right kind of price. But no doubt, I mean, the race pretty much goes through those two speed horses, because what they do early is going to have such an incredible impact on what happens in this race late.
No, I pretty much am there, too. One more backwards into the Stymie.
Yeah, the Stymie's a good race. I think the biggest thing here, obviously, is that Castle Chaos is going to go up to New York. He was also entered in the Gulfstream Park Mile on a Saturday's Found a Used card. And quite honestly, I mean, Steve, he becomes very much the horse to beat. Back at a place where he's a two-time winner. The horse that you're drawn to a little bit in terms of wondering exactly what we're going to get is Petulante, who's coming back from a long layoff, ended his 2023 campaign, that was rather brief, with three wins, including the Salvatore Mile. And, you know, all things considered, he beat Nimitz Class and Trademark, and those horses came back and ran well in the second half of 2023. So it's hard to poke holes in the race that he ran that day in any way, shape, or form, and he looks like he could have all kinds of upside. Rick Dutrow's barn has cooled off a little bit in the last 45 days or so. He was on quite a tear before that led to a bunch of people being able to engage in innuendo on social media, which doesn't ever really need much provocation. And shockingly, he's reverted back to the mean. So it's what we'd expect. This is the kind of horse off the layoff you can see Dutrow really having ready to roll, so I'm intrigued by him. I'm not sure exactly what we'll get. Worth saying, he can be much more forwardly placed than Castle Chaos, and so, you know, I think that's where his edge pretty much resides, because it looks like the only speed is Laughing Boy, and he kind of gets into a race with himself early pretty frequently, and that works against him. But yeah, good matchup, very intriguing, and I think the Mile is kind of the equalizer for a lot of these.
Then the Busher and Jody's Pride, George Abreu, and from there, take your pick.
Yeah, I mean, she's the one to beat, no doubt about it. I think, you know, in retrospect and in watching that replay back, I really forgot how well she ran in the Breeders' Cup. And I'm, you know, I might be wrong. I'm wrong pretty frequently, but I'm not as out on the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies as a lot of people are, because the final time figure is slow. I thought that pace was very strong. I thought it was a race that played out as a fast pace, and I'm not going to hold anything against just FYI and Jody's Pride. And I think I'm kind of hoping that both of them go on as 3-year-old fillies and prove that it was a stronger race than most people think. So I can't wait to see what she has to offer. She's a filly that I think caught Jorge Abreu a little bit by surprise in terms of how well she ran on the dirt when they took that debut race off the turf, and he entered her right back on the turf for the Matron, and they took that off and she ran even better. So she looks like an interesting prospect for sure. You know, whether Jin Jin is going to be as effective in a one-turn mile that might have a moderate pace as she was at a mile and an eighth in a super fast-paced race, that really is the biggest question in terms of some of the other options. But, I mean, I think Jody's Pride is clearly the horse to beat. Butch Reed is always worthy of serious consideration when he sends horses to New York, so I think you've got to give Carmelina the just due. And, of course, the PA-bred sensation Afy's Magic is in here. She looks like she has virtually no chance based on speed figures, but, you know, she's going to make her presence known early, and so that's how this race could quicken up in the opening half mile or so. That would maybe set the table for a horse like Jin Jin that undoubtedly is going to want to make that one long, sustained run from well off of it.
Nick, I agree on all fronts. And actually, you made one little reference to Maximus Meridius. Butch stretching that horse out. Discussed it with David yesterday. Butch Reed commands attention and respect. Are you done with the sixth race? Because that starts the pick five, and it is a good group.
I've done my first couple of runs through it, not completely finished, but yeah, it really is. It's a good, really good race. You've got a lot of different options in here, no doubt about it. I mean, it's got a pretty bulky field, but interestingly, despite having 12 horses, it doesn't really have an abundance of pace. I think there are enough horses that want to be somewhat forward to force things along a little bit. I was a little intrigued by Shipsational, who I thought maybe in a situation where he could come from off of it, off the short layoff, with Joel getting on board, he might be the right kind of price. Radio Red's the horse to beat. There's no doubt about it. I mean, he's been in good form for Danny Gargan. He should get a good trip stalking on the outside. And it's tough to argue with what he's done over the last couple of months. A horse that obviously has kind of blossomed in the winter and is taking advantage of the fact that he can run in open company races without those state bred races counting against him. I thought Factually Correct would be dangerous from the start. He's going to go. And Ruben has proven that he's really at his best when he can put the pedal to the metal right from the outset. So I would say it's one where I'm inclined to take a horse coming from a little bit off of it. Skylander is kind of a pet horse for me on the outside. He's one that I've liked a few times, and he finally, you're going to have to, as far as the late pick five goes, you're probably going to have to lean on Jody's Pride and some of the other horses that look like they kind of stick out, because this is going to be a really, really difficult sequence.
The only horse I want to bring up and include in that sixth race conversation is Patty Reynolds, with that first out winner and an exciting hard-fought winner, Vespucci. And this comes from last summer. If Vespucci comes back running, he's a threat at 8-1.
Yes, and hats off to the ownership. This is a great name, right? Empire maker out of a dam named Mappet, and you name the horse Vespucci. I guess thank God that Vespucci's first name was Amerigo, right? Otherwise, we'd be living in the United States of Vespucci. But no, interesting horse. And Pat Reynolds is excellent. This was a horse that was a game winner. And Aberdeen, who ran third in there, is no kind of bad horse at all. I mean, he was capable of running 80 plus buyer speed figures last year. So no, I agree. I'm intrigued by what he'll have off the layoff. I'm guessing that, you know, when he entered, even in a Gotham day one, other than Pat Reynolds, was probably hoping for a little bit softer spot. This ended up coming up pretty robust. But if he makes a forward move off of that positive debut, he's definitely a threat.
Did you look at the two Arkansas races yet, or no?
I have not.
All right, that's
no.
Fine.
I was
that's
pretty
fine.
Locked into Gulfstream and Aqueduct as well. So,
do you want to hit a one or two Gulfstream opinions that?
Sure.
You're on?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think the Fountain of Youth is clearly a more interesting race now that we hear that Speakeasy's running in it, and it was an interesting race no matter what. I don't really know how to feel about what that says about Locked. I get the feeling it's not necessarily that big a deal, but I think Locked is clearly the horse to beat. The thing is, we don't know what Speakeasy might be. You know, a second-time starter with 100 buyer speed figure and a 4 Thoroughgraph number in a race where he was 8-1 on Pegasus Day, right? It's just not something you'd expect at all of those things to happen basically at the same time. And now he's breaking from the rail with a short run to the first turn. He has to go. You wonder how much heat he's going to take. I mean, things really feel like they should set up well for Locked. Speakeasy running probably makes things a little bit harder on a horse like Doorknock, who ultimately wants to be pretty much pace involved. So I do think Locked will be tough. One horse I wanted to mention from the undercard is the 8 Mohawk Trail in race 13, the Honey Fox. Ooh. This is a Kelsey Danner trainee coming back off a layoff. She got good last year as a 3-year-old filly towards the end of it. My concern is she probably wants to go shorter when push comes to shove. She might even want to just go a mile, but there's a lot of pace in here, and she's going to settle and make one run under David Egan. She's going to be a big price as well. So I wanted to give Mohawk Trail a look in a situation where you're going to be able to get a lot of value there without question.
Nice. I thought Be My Sunshine was going to set up shop behind those speeds.
Yep, I think she's definitely a player. Chili Flag is also obviously very dangerous, and is clearly the horse to beat. And who knows? I mean, you know, two years ago, I thought Walkathon was on the verge of becoming a star, and then she obviously had some setbacks and had some issues when she came back. But she's gotten good in the last few races. She had a soft triple last time, but you know, I still think there's some upside there. So really, really interesting race, and you know, hats off to the Gulfstream Racing Office for delivering another huge card on a big day. These big fields left and right, and just a lot of intrigue. throughout the day.
Should be a really fun day here. Nick Tamaro, everybody, and Tam 1215. Nick's analysis when it comes to New York at In the Money, and then the Santa Anita and Gulfstream looks at Twin Spires, and of course, Sam Houston running this weekend as well, of course. So, Nick.
Indeed. Big weekend, no doubt about it. Glad to join you, Steve. Good luck.
Thanks, buddy. Nick Tamaro, everybody, who stays as busy as anybody. Let's keep this going. We've only fallen behind about 4 minutes, but now five. We'll get Marcus Hirsch in here, and Marcus is doing us a bit of a favor because he's in the car, and we'll just get a few fast opinions. Marcus, good morning.
Good morning. Not only am I in the car, I'm taking a cat to the vet, and he's not happy. He's going to be voicing a consistent stream of opinions from the sound of things. The main opinion being, I don't want to be here.
What is the cat's name?
The cat's name is Carson. He was found in the engine compartment of a car, so he's the son of a car, Carson.
That is fabulous. All right, good luck to Carson, and good luck getting him out of that container to the veterinarian.
I don't have to do that. I just set it down and go.
Exactly. Marcus, a quick reaction to the Rebel.
I wish that Tom in defense would have won, but
yeah, ran all right.
Otherwise, it seems like, I mean, he's okay, but maybe just one horse to think about in terms of a Triple Crown kind of horse. And I thought Timberlake did everything he could have. I mean, seemed like a really nice comeback. Didn't have to run too hard. Got a pretty simple trip, and I'm sure got a lot out of it. I would think his connections were quite pleased.
Well, the look ahead to what Cox wants to do. There's a potential for a Timberlake Sierra Leone confrontation in the bluegrass. So we'll see about that. Before we talk about...
Seems like it.
Yeah, that seems to be the ticket. Marcus, before we talk about the game plan for the weekend, Fountain of Youth and the Gotham, your impressions of Champlin yesterday and the follow-up for Greg Foley.
Well, I just actually looked a little while ago to see if there was a buyer up yet, but there was not. And I didn't attend that closely to the speed of the track yesterday. I don't think it was especially fast. He didn't run, I think, 1:10.34. You know, we'll see. It's a one other than against older horses. He's got some ways to go. And I don't know if his figure is going to come back as high as the 95 he got first time out. But he won easily, and I'm sure that his connections were over the moon with the way he ran back.
I'll also mention that the race after Champlin, because I watched that race, and then the TV was still on, and Lindsay Schultz is lighting it up, and she broke a maiden with a 4-year-old on the turf, but she also had
first time turf.
Yeah.
Bet down.
Yep.
And horses do get bet a lot, especially in New Jersey. They almost all seem to be live on grass, especially, you know.
Yeah, no, she does a good job, and I've been meaning to get to her. Let's turn our attention, Marcus, to the weekend and the 3-year-olds. Start in New York, big field, and while we all seem to be respecting a horse like Just a Touch, there's just too many other prices to consider.
Well, as I wrote in the game plan story, he's a horse, to me, he's easily the most likely horse to have an impact on a Triple Crown race in that field. And I do appreciate his ability, but I respect David Aragona's lines. I think he'll be lower than the morning line price. I think he's a horse, I mean, I've just seen it too many times with these young cock horses. I think he'll be 7-5 or something like that.
Yeah.
Could be wrong, but I mean, the point is that even if you like the horse as a horse with promise and potential, you have, like, it forces you to bet the race and bet somebody else. That's just, he's going to be way, way, way too short for what he ought to be, given all the different circumstances. even just including sheer luck. I mean, no idea how a horse like this is going to act if things don't go his way. You know, he hasn't had any sorts of experience other than one very fast and good-looking sprint race. So I'm not saying he's not, like, good enough to just win anyway. And while I think he will be somewhat capable of adapting to difficult circumstances, I don't completely trust him to do that at this stage in his career. So all things considered, that was my one major take. The other one was there's just with Slider drawn outside and all the other potential pace, I just don't see how they're not going to be going really fast. And I was looking for the right horse to make one run from off the pace and at a price. That was my theory.
And?
I think, what's his name? Capital Idea?
Yeah. Yep.
I like Capital Idea. What's Clement's other horse? Deterministic?
Yes.
His presence there intrigued me because it just seemed like an odd place. It made me think they like him, but I couldn't. The only workout video I could find of his was his first, like, easy half of the winter. So his debut was fine, but this other horse already has, it's supposed to rain. I mean, last I looked, it was 90% chance. The track's likely going to be wet, and Capital Idea already has a very fine one-mile race on a wet track there where he came from off the pace. I know the jock really got after him, but I thought he was going to win easily in any case. And also, I mean, he ran okay in his debut, which was a good learning experience. But he just looked like a different horse to me second time out. Like, he needed his first start in a lot of different ways. He could be, and I, you know, there's no workout video of him, so I can't see how he's been training. But I'm guessing he might be somewhat progressive.
I am 100% with you, and the open air outside box, where the air is fresh and clear, as Marty McGee would say, and 12-1 in a field of 13. So I love it. How about here at Gulfstream in the Fountain of Youth?
Yeah, how do you think they're going to bet that race, Steve?
Well, that's a great question. Now with Speakeasy, I think Locke goes favored.
Maybe.
Gargan is.
I think both horses on the inside are going to get bet, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. They absolutely are. And there's good.
Not just Speakeasy, but Victory Avenue too.
100%. 100%. And what's interesting about this is everybody is locked in on the two, one start horses. Then there's Dornock and Locke coming back. In the meantime, Bo Yates, he's got Frankie's Empire, and that horse of Rowan Crichton is not without chance. Real Macho. There's a lot going on in here, Marcus.
Well, I wasn't willing to go that deep. There could be a quick pace too, but I'm asking about prices because my theory is that Locke is going to be undervalued. And especially, I mean, I think a lot of people still have, oh, he missed a work, he didn't get to go to the right race in mind, and that's valid. But if you watch his work on the 16th, the first work back, I mean, he looked perfectly fine to me. He worked inside of Express Man, and, I mean, he galloped out. They kept the camera on him a long time, but he still wasn't done, and he had almost hit the far turn again. There's no video of the work after that, but he's been working since early December, and the way he moved in that work, and I know there was a big hullabaloo about him getting outworked by Fierceness considerably, supposedly, but when I went back and watched that, he worked fine. He's just a different kind of horse. I always thought he'd be better as a three-year-old, but I wondered if it might take a little bit. But watching that workout and the way he went about it made me think that he's going to be ready for his time. I going back and watching his Breeders' Cup, he actually ran a very strong race. I think the horse is extremely talented and one of the key players. If I hold him in that regard and the way I think the race is going to be bet, I think he's going to offer value.
Nice. How about anybody else underneath that could shake this up value-wise?
No. my brain only goes one place.
Well, right now, your focus needs to be on Carson and assuaging his concerns.
That's not going to happen. But I apologize for the disruptive nature of this visit. Although, fair warning, I did give you fair warning.
You did, and James Scully, his dog will be barking later. So. Not a problem.
Oh God, the barking dog. the bane of all radio hosts.
Marcus, good luck. I'll talk next week.
All right, bye bye.
Marcus Hirsch, everybody. So much fun. too good. Let's get to Brad Free, and we talked to Brad yesterday, of course, when word came that trying to await word of the how they were going to handle. And now we bought an extra 24 hours, obviously, to dive into the Santa Anita card. And it is good. Let me pull it out here. Brad Free back with us. And Brad, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you? The weather is gorgeous today, which is nice because we're expecting a rainstorm to arrive in the Arcadia area later tonight, and that's the reason why the Big Cap is going to be run on Sunday this year. So a good card this afternoon at Santa Anita, and Big Cap and three other graded stakes on Sunday at Santa Anita.
Well, and it, as Hammer explained, you kind of set the table for us yesterday, and then Hammer and Nate Newby visited about an hour and a half later with the decision and with some of the formalities. And, they're carding six turf races. And, if the rain came and came hard, you'd have a nightmare on your hands. So pushing it to Sunday and the Sunday card to Monday, it's not the worst thing that's ever happened.
No, it's not the worst thing that's ever happened. The worst thing that's ever happened is that somebody decided to, out in California, you can't run on a wet track anymore. I beg to differ. I mean, there's been some fantastic Santa Anita handicaps run over a wet track. I don't know what happened over the course of the last few years, other than the debacle a few years ago under the former regime at Santa Anita, when they were running and training on a sealed wet track, and we had a rash of breakdowns. But I do not agree with the idea that running on a wet track is, any more detrimental to a horse than running on a fast track. I don't know if I'm in the minority or majority as far as that opinion goes, but I back in the day, you could run on wet track in California. You can't do it anymore. So we're running on Sunday. Regarding the grass races, you're right. Here's the thing about the Santa Anita turf course. This, strangely enough, the grass course at Santa Anita can handle wet. The drainage system is top notch. They've made some improvements to the drainage on the Santa Anita turf course. And so even if we get a ton of rain on Saturday, I imagine the turf course will be likely to be listed good perhaps on Sunday, but at least this turf course can handle rain. And so I think it was probably a very prudent decision to run on Sunday. And of course, Sunday will be a lot more enjoyable for fans. I mean, nobody wants to stand out in the rain on Saturday afternoon at Santa Anita. But on Sunday, the weather forecast, I believe, is expected to be sunny. And so, it'll be a better day for overall racing.
Let's touch on the stakes action. And actually, there's a couple of non-stakes that are immersed in the second half of the card that are worth looking at. But talk about the San Felipe first. And Baffert, given the relaxed posture that he can take, there's no pressure to get to the Derby. He's got Nisos, said he's doing well. And here's a $300,000 grade two, and Nisos is running.
Yeah, I would have guessed that he would skip this race with Nisos after, he won the Bob Lewis by more than seven lengths, earned a 105 buyer, which is the highest figure this year by a horse of any age, tied for the highest. But Nystros came out of that race like, you know, no big deal. And, you know, Baffert had a couple of decisions to make. He could either continue to train Nystros or run him. And why not run him? There's no, you know, there's no Kentucky Derby to point for. Nystros is doing well. He's in the race. I expect he's going to be a very, very short price in a small field of five. And, you know, it's, you can't bet the race. I mean, at least I can't, not at 1-5 or 1-10 or whatever Nystros will be. But he is a very exciting horse to watch. Nystros is. He'll be a short price. It'll be a surprise if he gets beat on Sunday. Baffert also started or entered Wind Me Up, who finished second behind Nystros, more than seven lengths behind him, and Imagination, who gave the highly regarded Mahmood a battle in a one other than last month and ran well, lost by a neck to a better horse. He finished more than 10 lengths clear. So Baffert has three of the five starters in the San Felipe. Of course, none of them can earn Derby points. The two that could earn Derby points include John Sadler trained Scatify, who's he's lightly raced, and I think the best is yet to come for Scatify. He had missed a workout going into the Bob Lewis due to rain and track closures. And he, you know, he ran okay. He finished third, a long way behind Nystros. Wind Me Up wore him down. I think that Scatify definitely has room to improve in only the third start of his career. He's an interesting horse on the upswing. And McVeigh, who is a maiden running in a graded stakes race, what's John Sheriff doing running a maiden in a graded stakes race? It's because there are no maiden dirt routes in which to run McVeigh. And he is an improving colt. His numbers are headed the right direction. He's still very green. He's green in his races. He's green in his workouts. But this is a very well-regarded son of Constitution who we haven't seen the best of yet. I think he's up against it on Sunday, McVeigh is. But we're going to hear more from McVeigh as he, you know, gets his mental act together. When all is said and done, the San Felipe revolves around Nystros, who's going to be a very, very short price.
Well, and I happened to notice yesterday, I think it was yesterday, in fact, I'm sure it was because I retweeted it, Andy Harrington sent up a flare about McVeigh, and that's a hand tip by Clocker Andy. He said, do not overlook McVeigh going into this. So obviously he's thought that coming out of the Lewis, the two works, be anxious to see National Turf and also Toby Terrell's comments in the DRF Clocker report about McVeigh.
Yeah, I am too, and I haven't looked at them, seen them yet. That's a very interesting take by a clocker whose opinion I think all of us respect immensely. Andy Harrington, one of the best in the business. You know, Toby Terrell, of course, provides clocking information for DRF, but that's an interesting take. I would expect McVeigh, you know, he's probably going to be the longest shot in the field, at least based on speed figures and the fact that he has yet to win a race. But that's a very interesting observation by Andy Harrington. And I guess if you're looking for, you know, a long shot to finish underneath in the exacta, underneath Nystros, McVeigh is certainly a contender as likely to be the highest price in the field.
Let's press into the Kilrow. Here's the grade one, the first of the two grade ones on the afternoon, and in fact a grade one double with the big cap following. And here's an interesting group of nine.
Yeah, it is an interesting group, and I think there are two, you know, the two principals are Easter, who is just on a roll right now for trainer Phil D'Amato. He's won three in a row. He's won two graded stakes races, back-to-back graded stakes races, making his first start since winning the San Gabriel on opening day. He's, you know, one of the contenders, and the other one is a horse who hasn't started since the Breeders' Cup, and that's De Jure, who he was just overmatched in the Breeders' Cup. But this is a good horse, De Jure is, and Baffert believes he's better now than he was last year at age five. He's now a six-year-old gelding, De Jure. Listen, these two are very difficult to separate Easter and du jour. It's basically a coin flip. I went with du jour. I think that he ran against slightly better company last year than Easter did in his back-to-back graded stakes wins, but it's splitting hairs. Those are the two favorites, Easter and du jour, but there are a couple other interesting horses in this race, Field of Nine, including Goliad. You talk about a fast horse. I mean, he opened up a 12-length lead last time out in the Grade 3 Thunder Road at a mile on turf, and, you know, you had to wonder, well, when's he going to stop? He got tired. Of course he did. After going 109-1, he still won the race by 3 lengths, Goliad, and he's going to be out there winging on the front end. He'll probably be hounded, or could potentially be hounded, by the stretch-out sprinter to his outside, and that's First Piece, who won a highly rated race down the hill in his comeback race, and he's has the type of speed and tactical positioning that probably is going to allow Mike Smith to sit second behind Goliad, and First Piece is going to get first run at Goliad. But both those horses are contenders. Goliad, he might not stop, and First Piece, second start back off a layoff, who knows? Maybe he inherits the lead and holds off the closers. It's an interesting group. That we've talked about the turf division in California. There are no superstars out here currently. There hasn't been for a while. But it's a good, solid, evenly matched group of nine. Easter and du jour, a coin flip. The front runners, Goliad and First Piece, are contenders as well.
I thought that if you're looking for a price to pick up some pieces later, Polanco stretches Iridio back out at 8-1. And Prince Obama comes back off the year layoff for Phil D'Amato. And I'm anxious to see what the clocking comments are about Prince Obama, who is a multiple graded stake winner.
Steve, I got to crack up because I knew you were going to mention Iridio. I mean, I really think that you have a thing for this horse because you've been talking about it for the last years. We all have horses that one of my colleagues, Kurt Hoover, calls them obsession horses. Horses just can't get enough of, and you go back on and keep on, you know, going back after them and after them. He scored a 19-1 upset last time out in a turf sprint. He has run races, Iridio has, that are as fast as the best races by du jour and Easter. And yeah, he's the contender. So I'm glad that you haven't jumped off his bench.
No,
like yet.
No.
And as for Prince Obama, I read a quote in the last week or so. I didn't talk to trainer Phil D'Amato about Prince Obama specifically, but I read a quote that's somewhere that said, you know, Prince Obama, he could kind of come back in a, you know, a longer distance race, which is what he has been running in, but he's doing so well that D'Amato might just go ahead and roll the dice in the Kilroy Mile. This is a horse who hasn't started in more than a year, but he must be training super. Well, he is, according to D'Amato. And Prince Obama, Frankie Dettori aboard, you know, why not? This is an evenly matched group, at least on figures and on class. And Prince Obama would be an interesting long shot play in the kill row.
The big cap and the big cap, you know, big cap has sadly, you know, had to suffer the slings and arrows of international schedulings and some other pressures, but you do have some heady competition here. Newgrange and Newgate, obviously, and Brad Cox shows up with a first time graded stake try for Godolphin, the Curlin out of Round Pond, Highland Falls. Reincarnate, a little bit of a knocker at this point. Still trying to find, I think Baffert trying to find out what, you know, he wants as a 4-year-old. What's your big cap take?
My take is that I would not be surprised if any one of these seven horses pops up and wins this race, including Mixto, who's going to be one of the longer shots in the field, and Subsanador as well. I think he can improve off of his disappointing U.S. debut, a Group 1 winner from South America. This is a very evenly matched group. When we talked briefly about this race yesterday, Steve, I speculated that Newgrange would be the favorite. I'm not so sure about that. After looking at the thoroughbred figures, Highland Falls is the fastest horse in the race. He's also never started in a graded stakes race and never raced beyond a mile and 1/16. But Brad Cox has a good horse on his hands with that pedigree by curling out of a Breeders' Cup Distaff mare and with back-to-back thoroughgraph numbers of one. Highland Falls will enter the big cap as the fastest horse in the race on those numbers. I still am siding with Newgrange because he's got the proven form over the track. He's 5-for-7 at Santa Anita. He's a multiple graded stakes winner. He has a forwardly placed running style that allows him to either make the lead or sit second behind Newgate. Either one would be fine. But this is a good evenly matched group. Reincarnate is a horse I know this was not Baffert's first choice in the run. There was an allowance race that never did fill that Baffert was trying to get Reincarnate in. So he's ready to run, so you got to find a spot, and this is the spot for Reincarnate. He would be the one horse I think that would surprise me a little bit. And then there's a kind of crazy horse because
yep.
Salesman won a mile and 5/8 dirt marathon in November. That was his last start. He has trained very, very well, Salesman has, for his first start in 4 months. And I wouldn't be surprised to see him outrun whatever price he is, Salesman. But a good, evenly matched group of older horses. Yeah, it's not the big cap that it once was, but it's still a good, solid betting race. And, I'm going for Newgrange over Highland Falls, Salesman in third, but you could make a case for others in this field.
Yeah, Salesman, that Thoroughbred Aftercare race, of course, is the former Breeders' Cup Marathon. And, now a regular presence on the Breeders' Cup undercard. And this is yet another. I asked Mandela, 3 weeks ago, is he taking a page from Bill Mott, having maybe the best shed row he's ever had at this, I don't want to call it a late date, but it is a bit of a late date. And Mandela's just firing on all cylinders.
Mandela's on a roll right now. His stable has a lot of good horses. He has that good 3-year-old filly in his barn. Tamara still hasn't come back yet, and something to look forward to from her this half of the year. But yeah, he's got a good bunch of older horses, and Salesman fits right into that category. You know, it's funny because Mandela, this horse came in from Europe, and he always trained very, very well over the dirt track. But Mandela said he was trying to win a race with him. He was a grass horse and synthetic horse overseas, so he kept him on grass, and then finally said, well, screw it, I'm going to give him a shot on dirt. What happened is he won the race by more than 8 lengths, and he got a huge number out of that race as well. He got a 1 on thoroughgraph, Salesman did, for what it's worth in a mile and 5/8 dirt marathon. But he was he's a fast horse on numbers, training very, very well. Mandela probably would have started him in the San Pasqual earlier this meet. He had a minor hiccup. It was not a big deal. Got over it in a hurry and has trained super. And the 7/8 workout last week was very good. So Salesman is an interesting horse. I don't know if he can take the heat of a quicker tempo mile and a quarter race compared to the mile and 5/8 race in which he ran. But he's an interesting horse. And if he slips through the cracks, in the 6-8-1 range, he might be worth a shot as well. You can make a case for a lot of horses in this field.
Before we talk about the Buena Vista, there is a downhill ninth race in here as part of the late pick 4 and pick 5. Who'd you pick in here, Brett?
Oh, boy, I wish I had some confidence in my selection. I took a little bit of a shot with a mare by the name of Just Nails. She hadn't started in a long time when she returned last month in a main oval turf sprint going 6 furlongs. This is a mare whose best races have been on the front end, but they took her back a little bit, and she got into some trouble. She was bumping with the runner-up Don't You Forget into the lane. She got blocked, and then that was it. She finished 7th in a 10-horse field. It wasn't exactly a thrilling comeback effort. I expect Just Nails to improve second start back, but this is a tough group, and she'll have to beat the filly, or turn the tables on a filly who finished four lengths in front of her last time out, and that's Don't You Forget, who's likely to be one of the favorites. She was 15-1 last time out and ran lights out. Don't You Forget did. So she's probably a little more logical. I'm just hoping that Just Nails can make a forward move, second start off the bench. She's a lightly raced five-year-old mare, Just Nails is, and maybe she can improve. But there's a lot of contingencies involved in that. So it's a tough race. I'd pick Just Nails over Don't You Forget. Summer Lake dusted Calbreds in her comeback race last month as well. This is a wide open scramble. I took a shot at a price. I think she'll be a price. Just Nails.
Yeah, I looked at this and I crossed my eyes. Baltus, that Pleasant Wave is a turn back from a mile, which plays well down the hill. Should mention too, Haley LeVade. The Beau Hirsch, Gary Studi, very quietly puffing away on that cigar every morning. I think it's the same cigar for years. It has had a terrific meet.
Yeah, he's had a really good meet. 13 starters, 4 wins. And Haley LeVade coming in off a little bit of a layoff. Hasn't started since December 1st. Her numbers are right there with everyone else. In fact, you could argue that she should be one of the favorites first start back. Why not? I mean, look, there's a lot of – you can throw out any name in the field virtually and you make a case for, that filly or mare to possibly score an upset. Haley LeVade is one of them.
Gets us to the nightcap and the Buena Vista, the 1 mile grade 2 for the fillies and mares. And here's a big field, but there's a couple of very clear, favorite types and likely types, starting when we mentioned it yesterday with Ruby Nell, for instance. But there's more, there's more than that. Where'd you end up?
Yeah, I ended up with the filly who I expect to be the favorite, and that would be Ruby Nell. Mandela was when he sent her down to Florida for that big race on the Pegasus undercard. Yeah. And, after her wins out in California, in which, she just takes off and she goes to half at 45 and change. And he was worried, Mandela was, that Ruby Nell was going to take off again and kind of, waste herself on the lead. So he relayed his concerns to the Phillies new jockey, Frankie Dettori, and Dettori took Mandela's instruction to heart and took Ruby Nell back after the break, which is counter to how she typically runs. And Ruby Nell was not happy doing that. She was in traffic. She was uncomfortable. She was blocked in the lane. She ran an outstanding third-place finish, beaten less than 2 lengths, despite running against her normal style. So I thought it was a terrific third-place finish by Ruby Nell. She's reunited on Sunday with Edwin Maldonado, who rode her to 4 victories in the last few months. And you know what Maldonado's going to do. He's going to let her use her weapon, and that's her speed. So Ruby Nell, she's going to be up there on near the front end. And I think that she's the horse to beat. To me, the interesting horse in the race is number 1, Be Your Best, who has never faced older fillies or mares, and she's doing it for the first time. She finished a good second last time out in the Grade 1 American Oaks for 3-year-old fillies, but this is her first start since then. She's backing up from a mile and a quarter to a mile. She can be forwardly placed, or she can rally from behind. I'm not sure how she's training. I'm looking forward to seeing some clocker analysis from her, but Be Your Best. She has a shot in her first against older to, possibly spring an upset. And then after that, they all kind of look the same. Lucky Girl, Moofy, Justique, several of them come out of the Megahertz, the Grade 3 Megahertz last month. It's an evenly matched group of fillies or mares, and there's no Anisette's in this lineup. She's probably, or has the potential to be the top older grass filly in California this year when she makes her comeback for Leonard Powell. Closing remarks, had no chance last time out in a slow-paced race. won by Bella Bell. I think she's a better mare than her most recent start. So Jess, closing remarks. A lot of ways to go in here, but I believe the two principals are Ruby Nell, who I expect to be on or near the front end, and the 4-year-old filly, Be Your Best, from off the pace.
I'm going to throw in, you mentioned in passing, Lucky Girl. She's 12-1 for D'Amato, making her 5-year-old debut, first time as a mare, and gets Antonio Freisu. And I like this scenario at that price. I don't know if she can pass them all, but she certainly can pick up a nice share and boost the exotics.
Yeah, she's my third preference in the race.
There you go. There we go.
Yeah, 12-1 would be a fat number on a contender in a race with many contenders.
Outstanding, Brad Free, everybody. Brad Free won, of course, on Twitter. One California note, Brad, that I meant to get to yesterday, and since you're with me, I'll mention the passing of Mr. Big. And thoughts out to George Krikorian and everybody at Legacy Ranch. Mr. Big. You know, the Dynaformers, there aren't too many left, but he made his mark on the CalBred program.
No, there's no doubt about it. And, you know, there's not a long list of top California stallions. He was certainly one of them. He sired a lot of good horses around here, not only in CalBred races, but in graded stakes races as well. So it's an unfortunate loss of Mr. Big. And I would guess that, you know, now, with his passing, it looks like Clubhouse Ride is very well positioned to become, you know, the top West Coast-based stallion. So, unfortunate passing of Mr. Big, but he left behind a lot of good horses.
Well, good luck this weekend, Brad, and you'll be able to sit back on Saturday and fire, right? You can watch. Yeah, any other opinions around the country? Anything you looked at?
No, I mean, I'm looking forward to the Fountain of Youth, obviously, because we're, you know, David Aragona and myself are in the Derby watch and following the developments closely. I'm looking forward to that race. I'm glad that Pletcher's running Speakeasy in that race. Also looking forward to that allowance race this afternoon, Friday afternoon at Gulfstream, in which Conquest Warrior makes the third start of his career off a tough trip win last time out. I think that Chug McGahee might have the goods. We'll find out more about him this afternoon. So those are, you know, a couple of races I'm looking forward to watching.
Well, we always look forward to coverage from Brad Free. Brad, good luck. I appreciate it.
Talk to you guys soon. Bye.
Brad Free, folks, and detailed analysis by the lead handicapper of the Daily Racing Form. Let's get to James Scully. I just heard from Caton. Caton gave Caton a couple of choices, and so she's going to come around at about 11:20. We'll probably take a break after we talk to James. Then Dave Grenning is going to come sit in. We got Welsh lined up, of course, as well. And who else? Who am I missing? Caton. We'll call Rich Ang in Vegas. Seth is going to stop by. And Hammer. There we go. So there's your lineup. I'm anxious to see what Scully's going to be doing here. We'll get a Kentucky Derby report. And, of course, this is Twin Spires weekend preview at the races. And I talked about the Marcus thing. The Gulfstream will, where is that? Where is my Gulfstream? That was that maiden race. Yeah, the maiden race that, speaking of Bo Yates, right? Yeah. The man up front paid $1,480. Pletcher's, the Pletcher West Point Rapoli Viola, 3-5 favorite, Coinvest, could not get to the leader. That was a heady ride by Luis Saez. This was a cold front out of a Concerto mare, Shady Brook Farm, homebred, and partner Pam Klein. Yeah. Yates does a great job. Yesterday, by the way, yesterday was the Pletcher's 32nd wedding anniversary. And one of those funny, leap days, right? A picture popped up on my phone yesterday. whatever photo, was it the Amazon photo thing, and whatever the day is, you know, you get photos from, and there was Fasic Tipton, the, you know, when they were doing the sale here at Gulfstream, and I took a picture, as it happens, of Todd and Tracy Pletcher. This would have been, I don't know, 8-9 years ago. So it popped up on the phone. So I sent it off to them and wished them a happy anniversary. And technically, they've only had 8 anniversaries, of course, in 32 years. So, and then Tracy said, in fact, I should read it. It's very funny because she says that they could have had a normal anniversary, but it was the only day that Wayne Lucas gave Todd to go get married. It was pretty funny. I love it. Where are we going? Scully. I couldn't remember who was going to be next. Let's see what James is doing. And, you know, one thing I hope, I'm going to assume that he's looked tonight at the Cincinnati Trophy. And I know we touched on it Wednesday with Caitlin. It is a terrific race. James Scully, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Just been hustling around trying to get the dog Artemis settled down. I think we'll be good to go for at least 2 minutes.
Well, you must have heard earlier.
I did.
Yeah, cat
Carson. Yeah, I heard the Carson. Yeah,
Carson beat you to the pet hijinks front. Although I got a very interesting note from our friend Leslie Knopf, who said that she had a cat named Carson, and it was her favorite cat ever. So
did she find it in the incident?
No, she didn't. It was actually it was a rescue of sorts. It was a cat that was found in Washington Park, which, of course, for those that come to Albany in the spring, the Tulip Festival, which is just unbelievable, fabulous. You know, the displays of tulips in Washington Park.
Isn't this the time of year for tulips?
It's getting there. If it keeps up like it was, you know, as I was the day I left, it was 68 degrees.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the way we are, too. We're going to roll right up towards the 70s this weekend.
Well, and I hope some people will give Punxsutawney Phil some credit, because they were discounting Groundhog Day's relevance. People were trying to cancel Groundhog Day. It's unacceptable.
It used to be a big deal, but it isn't anymore, no matter how much we reminisce about it. But
it is a big deal.
I don't want to cancel it, though. I don't want to cancel it. So.
Everybody knows it's one of my favorite days. I have not, the last couple of years, I have not done my usual tweeting of scenes from Groundhog Day, which is, I'll make the prediction now for our children and grandchildren. It already has become an It's a Wonderful Life for February 2nd, for that time of year. It's a picture that is just going to continue to grow in stature and renown. It's just an exceptionally brilliant film, and you can't watch it enough. I mean, not only do I watch it every Groundhog Day, but I'll watch it every time it pops up on cable. So,
yeah, big fan of it. Yeah, love Bill Murray. That's one of his best works.
Well, I don't want to get. I'm digressing, and we don't have time for digressing. How about the Kentucky Derby report before we do anything else? What was your take on what we saw in the Rebel?
I thought Timberlake came back in good order. I thought it was an encouraging performance. I don't know about the competition in there, but, you know, he showed up and ran his race and, you know, overcame a wide trip and won going away in the end. So I thought it was a good starting point. I thought his Breeders' Cup Juvenile effort was disappointing. And so I thought that race was encouraging and a good race to build upon. And he'll step up and face deeper competition next time. But, you know, he's a talented colt. I mean, he's still got a... You know, I think there's some questions surrounding like his affinity or threshold for longer distances, but he's going to, until he proves he can't do it, he's going to have the opportunity to, in my mind, because he's certainly bred for it.
Anybody else behind them that you think bears watching? But you called the competition. I don't want to say suspect.
I think that Northern Flame ran a good race for third. I think he's coming up, and I just think he's going to be a really good one-turn type, like Mahler. He'll cut back to seven furlong sprints at some time. I think that's I think Kenny Peake has some nice three-year-olds. So I mean, he's got Mystic Dan. I thought that Northern Flame ran well for him. Obviously, Common Defense took a step forward in a second stakes race, but, you know, whether those horses, I'm a little bit dubious whether a horse like Common Defense will even make the Derby field, but that was certainly a solid runner-up effort for him.
All right. Well, let's before we dive into the myriad preps and all the action, let's take a look what's on the platform for players.
We have got a ton of promos. I mean, we got like at least 10 promos out there on our offer page at Twin Spires, more than any ADW out there. And, you know, once again, we're focusing on these Kentucky Derby, Road to the Kentucky Derby weekends, spotlighting a track where we have a 15% profit boost on all winning win bets, trifecta bets, exacta bets, and superfecta bets. So that's going to be taking place at Gulfstream tomorrow on all their races. We also have this brand new competition where we're going to give away $5,000 it's at Turfway and Fairgrounds. You'll like this one, Steve. We got 8 selected races. You got to make 8 $10 win bets, and whoever has the most win bets is going to win, either take the whole pool or win a share of $5,000. So that's a brand new one we got. And Yeah, we got to hit it or split it, pick 5, like $2,500 promotion at Turfway tonight, and lots of other promos at twinspires.com. Go to the offers page, make sure you opt in.
Well, and I hope you looked at the Cincinnati Trophy, but every Friday in March I'm seeing you got the Twin Spires Turfway Park win bonus, 15% on single horse win wagers at Turfway every Friday this month. So you got what? 1st, 8th, 15th, 22nd, 29th. You got 5 of those. That $5,000 challenge is wild. For win bettors, that's an interesting opportunity. And no matter how they whack up the $5,000, that's it's free money essentially. You got to be involved. You mentioned the Road to the Derby profit boost, and there's also the Bankroll Builder as well.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I mean, both of these races at Turfway this weekend, the Cincinnati Trophy for fillies tonight, and then the John Pataglia Memorial tomorrow, have like full fields. I got such a strong betting product at Turfway Park, really competitive, deep races. And I'll just start there at least on Saturday, if you want. I'll in the John Pataglia Memorial, I'm going to try to beat Epic Rod. I respect his talent, but despite his pedigree, I'm like a little bit wondering if he's going to be better at one turn. I just thought he overpowered a short field in that Leonatus on a really slow pace. And this race has a lot of speed in it. Bold at Midnight's going to be hustling. I think Blue Eyed George is a contender, but I'm going to go with Gettysburg Address shipping in for Brad Cox. These constitutions, can run well on synthetic tracks. And I still think that this colt, like I said, I like that Northern Flames allowance win. I actually bet him in the Rebel last week, and he ran third. And I'm not going to hold that race too much against him last time. He always finds a way to get himself into a tight, uncomfortable trip. But maybe in the switching to the synthetic track in this 12-horse field with some good pace in there, Gettysburg Address can work out the right trip and prove best with Eldorado Corrales.
Well, Corrales and Cox hitting at 35%, 48 starts with a $2.81 ROI. I mean, that's with 48 starts, that is a garish set of figures.
I mean, Brad Cox he's winning at a 33% need. I mean, even with Machado and Concepcion, he's got big, strong numbers with those guys. They've won a lot of races for him during the winter so far.
I do. Hold on. Before you move on, I this will be the only chance to mention the Cincinnati Trophy. And this is a fabulous, fun betting affair. And you don't have to bet Sistina Chapel of McPeaks. You don't have to bet, any of the obvious players, although Living Magic coming in for Phil Schoenthal, I would respect, particularly off that good effort in the debutante last year at Presque Isle. Brian Michael has got Pikachu fame. He's got Cozy Rags in here with Jimenez, second in the Valdale, and is going to be 10-1. Brissett takes over on Dazzling Dictator from Ian Wilkes, 6-1. This was a Lothenbach purchase that was notable. Eric Foster's in here at 9-2 with Everland. There is a lot going on. This is a good race tonight. 8:25 post, the Cincinnati Trophy.
I do think that Living Magic, I mean, I think she catches a field, doesn't have it doesn't have a lot of pace. I think she's going to get a good trip up front coming back off the layoff. I'm a little intrigued. I don't know if the race will set up well for her, but I do like that Everland. I understand they dropped her in for a maiden claiming race, but she overcame a real hard, real troubled trip to win that day, and that last race was strong. So I do respect that late runner. I mean, she's an Arrogate filly. I don't have any issue with her going from a maiden claiming and starter allowance to a stake.
I've also got to mention for our friend Todd Mostoller, Viscountess, 12-1. Tim Girton brings the Lord Nelson filly back out of the Valdale, as well as the allowance win. She's going to have to get a little faster to hit this, but maybe she's stretching and maybe she wants the two turns. We'll find out. And we already talked Battaglia, so I can put away Turfway for the rest of the morning. All right, where are we going first?
All right, I'll go to Aqueduct and then I'll hit Gulfstream for a couple opinions. I'll start at Aqueduct in race 7, the Busher Stakes. It's a Kentucky Oaks qualifier. Marks the return of Jody's Pride. Jody's Pride and FYI and Jody's Pride, who ran 1-2 in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies, are both launching their comeback on Saturday, and I'm betting against both of them, Steve. I'm taking a negative view of that race. None of the, we've seen the fourth and fifth place finishers come back and not even hit the board in stake races. Scalable last week or 2 weeks, a couple weeks ago, and Life the Pletcher Filly at Tampa. And I just like, one thing about that race is they came home real slow. The last 16th, they both got the right trip on the front end. I thought Just FYI and Jody's Pride, they ran their final 5/16 in nearly 34 seconds. I'm looking at others. I'm hoping to beat Jody's Pride in there. And I'll mention, I think there's a lot of pace in here. I think Carmelina and others are going to guarantee a pace. From a multi-race perspective, I mean, I could use several in here other than the 6, so I'm going to leave out all of my tickets. But I'm intrigued by number 3, Sicilian Princess, shipping in for Bill Walton off of a runner-up effort at Turfway. To say that this filly missed the start in that race is an understatement. She just got off to a slow start, but she really hustled right back out after breaking like a step slow or just coming out a little bit slow. Rush Forward, I thought, really ran a good second that day. I think she's going to keep improving upon that, and she's going to get a favorable setup. I'll also use number 2, Jin Jin, and number 7, Carmelina in multi-race bets, but I'm going to try to beat Jody's Pride at 4-5 on the morning line.
All right. That's an alternate take.
Yeah, and in the stymie, Petulant, this horse, 5-year-old, seems to have a lot going for him. But he's never raced in New York. He's never raced on a wet track. And he was a vet scratch last Friday. And I certainly don't think he's going to be 5-2 in this race. I think he's going to be much shorter. I think a lot of people are looking forward to betting this horse and thinking he's the next coming to Wide Barrio. I'm going the other way with number 1, Kinetic Sky, for Rick Dutroux. He won his last start at a mile. I think he's really come on this winter. And I just think last last time in that toboggan over, he didn't get away sharply from the starting gate. I look for him to brake better because I know he can handle off tracks. I don't think the track condition, you know, hurt him last time. I think he just didn't get away sharply. But I look for a better brake and a better result for number one, Kinetic Sky and the Stymie.
Well, and that, of course, the other Dutch row, Petulant is 5-2, Kinetic Sky 4-1.
Exactly.
You got Castle Chaos, you know, coming up for Falcone. I don't know what.
Yeah,
to
he's
do.
Already. Yeah, he's shipped. Out, he's scratched for sure out of that race at Gulfstream.
Yeah,
he is going to run in that
Stymie.
And then in the, I'll just give a take in the Gotham. I do like Just a Touch. I mean, I'm not saying I'm looking forward to betting him in there, but I think he's going to like step up and run a good race in that spot. And, you know, if I was looking to play him in some exactas, you know, I might chip around with, like a horse like Capital Idea who, I don't think he's going to be 12-1. I think he'll get some play, but I like both Clement horses. That Deterministic really ran a good race at Saratoga last year. So I don't really see much value or much betting perspective in that race, but I do think Just a Touch is going to get a good trip from the outside in the Gotham.
So 10 with 313.
Yes.
All right.
And then looking at Gulfstream Park, I'll start in the Mac Dorada, which is like race number 7. Tommy Port did not race on the turf until last summer. It took him to the summer latter part of his 4-year-old season to finally switch over to turf. This horse should, you know, always had the potential to be good on turf because he won his first two starts on synthetic and then ran second in a stake on synthetic. So he showed an affinity for synthetic surfaces early on. After he went off form on the main track last year, they switched him to turf. I liked his race in the John's Call at Saratoga. I liked his runner-up effort in the Cape Hello been at Delaware Park. And even in that Sycamore, he was in position in mid-stretch to make a serious impact and just came up a little bit short. I think he's going to take a step forward as a 5-year-old on the grass. And I think that this race, he doesn't catch, you know, I mean, I think Main Event and King's Max were a little bit, you know, took a step back last time. But I do think Main Event is the probable lone speed or the pace in there. And I think Tawny Port's going to get an ideal like stalk a trip right behind him, make his move in the stretch and prove best in the Mac Dermata. So I like number 7 Tawny Port in race 7.
6-1 on Tawny Port that Clement has fashioned into a steady turf performer.
Absolutely. And then I'll mention real quick in the Devona Dale, I'm pretty keen on I'm going to use the 2 and the 8 in the multi-race bets, Leslie's Rose and Into Champagne. And I'm going to look to make a bet on Into Champagne. I think she's going to get a little bit overlooked against those two rivals. I like her first two starts for Ian Wilkes. And I'm going to give her a shot to run really well, sitting just off the pace, and then offering a move in the Devona Dale.
All right. I seems like everybody's going to kind of stand against just FYI here, which I can understand. I mean, she's going to have to come back run.
Yeah, and then in the Gulfstream Park Mile, I like Il Miracola. I was on Tumbarumba last time.
Yep.
I knew nobody could bet him off of a runner-up effort in a Louisiana Bred Stakes race, and sure enough, he paid $19. In this race here, that race, he was just all out to beat a bunch of horses that little separated him on the wire. And I'm looking at the number 4, Il Miracola, to love the cutback to a 1-turn mile and really just relish, I think, the class relief in this spot. I think he's been running against better horses. He's got 2 of his 3 wins at a mile distance. And I think, you know, he's listed at 9-2 in the morning line, but there's no chance he'll be that with those odds. But I do think he'll prove best in the Gulfstream Park Mile.
Well, and with Castle Chaos coming out, it trims things down to what, a 7-horse field. So don't marry yourself to, you know, the odds that has published.
Listen, I'm probably taking too much of like a nuanced view towards Dornick, but you know. right after that Remsen, you know, Gargan said, he was like, hey, you know, I don't anticipate him need much time off. We may bring him back in the withers and then go and run him in a final prep and, you know, in order to keep it at a mile and eighth distance. And he didn't even return to the work tab until after they ran the withers. And then he said, like, this week, hey, you know, he doesn't have to win this race or return. He basically, I read his quotes this week, Steve, and he basically was saying, look, I got the horse at 75%. He's not going to be cranked up. And I think he's beatable in there. Obviously, I do respect Locke, but I'm going to bet if he doesn't get bet down too much, number one, Speakeasy. And I just loved how he ran last time, the way he got off that rail post so nimbly, had no problem whatsoever breaking from down inside, despite being a real big athletic colt. And that was a fast race. And I thought he just toyed with Victory Avenue in deep stretch, won just as he pleased. And I think he's poised to take a step forward off that race. And he's just going to get the jump, I hope, on his stablemate, because I do think Locke has the potential to run him down, you know, going a mile and an eighth or, you know, anything. But I'm hoping that short stretch works against Locke and that Speakeasy gets the job done in the Fountain of Youth.
All right. It's an interesting scenario with him bypassing today's allowance.
Isn't it a situation, though, whereby if he had drawn outside, given how well he ran from the rail last time going 7 furlongs, if he had drawn like outside in this race, he'd probably be in that allowance. And drawing post one actually made him really happy. I mean, I that's what I thought, because he just ran so big from post one in that debut race. So that's just, I think, an attribute in his hat, the way he ran last time from in there. It won't bother him at all being down inside in this Fountain of Youth, which is going to have some real pace in there. A horse I'd look at odds just to hit the board if you're playing tries or supers is Real Macho. I did think that win last time was pretty nice over Born Noble and Merritt, and he's going to be a big price in there. He's going to be like the fifth choice. So, you know, he could add some spice to the vertical exotics.
I've mentioned Rowan Crichton and Real Macho a few times, and Frankie's Empire. That first start under the care of Michael Yates, Bo Yates, that caught my eye, the Swale win. And maybe he's a closing sprinter, and that may be the case. But at the number he's going to be, he'll be picking some horses off late. And I think I'm going to work him in underneath at the least.
I got a last second Friday push. It's going to be number 5, Sister Linda, in the 5th race at Aqueduct today. This mare didn't make the lead last time, but she catches a field with a lot less speed in it today, and she runs her best races on the front end, and I think she's got a shot to fire at first off the claim for Wayne Potts. So I'm going number 5, Sister Linda, in the 5th race at Aqueduct today.
Easy to remember, 5 in the 5th. What's the morning line?
8-1.
The LSFP, the last second Friday push from James_Scully 111. James, good luck this weekend. We'll talk to you from Tampa next week.
Yeah. And Jay, safe travels. Best of luck to you this weekend. Thank you, Steve.
James Scully, everybody, and Twin Spires weekend preview. Let's head to the break. Casey, let's take the break here. And as we do that, you could slap a headset on, you know. You don't have to sit there, you know. Hold on. Don't you put the headset on and you expect that the mic is going to be live.
I just put a headset, took the headset off.
Well.
TV, very good this morning.
Yeah. And you're wearing my tie.
But that's why I wore it in. I was going to take it off, but I had to wear it in for you. And I also had to keep the jacket on because as I was leaving the house today, I put a pen in my pocket. I drew on my shirt. I believe it.
This is why it's Felix and Oscar, the odd couple.
I did that. And I was like, I can't believe I just did that.
Well, but that's part of the charm. That's the Seth Merrow magic.
And I promoed you quite a bit this morning. I said tomorrow morning 8 o'clock. Tune in. Steve Beck will be in. I was solo today on the handicapping show, but it's gonna be raucous tomorrow.
So I got to do the dog and pony. I've got to be on. Do I have to be on my best behavior?
That's up to you. I'm leaving that up to you.
Now there's no Tina unless she calls me at 7:45 and says, "Don't be mean to Seth," because that is something she says on a regular basis when I leave the house. Don't be mean to Seth. So I'm not mean to Seth. We kid because we love. It's the people are counting on that.
Yeah, people do. It has now become a thing over on the front side at Saratoga. People point out the tie, and it's like, "Oh, that's a big tie, right?" And it's like, "Oh my God, yes, it is."
Well, I see you wore nice dark colors for South Florida. It's.
I was kind of debating what to go with, and this was just the
wait
easiest
a minute.
Coat to, yeah,
oh,
no,
my God.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It was just the easiest.
Oh, my God.
It was the easiest coat to
he's
go
He's wearing
with.
A wool coat. He's wearing a it's nice. It happens to be nice.
It is a nice coat. That's why I went with it. You can't. Navy blue.
Is it navy or is it black?
Well, that's a good question. You might be right. First impression was a dark navy, but you're right.
It's black.
I think it is black.
Unbelievable. What are you wearing tomorrow? Because I don't.
I'm wearing the same jacket because I only brought one.
Oh my God!
I pack light. I don't pack like you. And you're packing for 6 weeks.
I actually got a trim. I got a fairly narrow. Because I've got a medium-sized bag. I don't like to take the big, you know, the steamer trunk. I'm not in. It's too much.
No, I hear you. That's I pack light. And so I only have the one jacket, but I do have a different shirt and a different tie.
Well, all right. Well, all right.
Now I got to get a different shirt. Now they've drawn on this one.
I think the picture I just took, I think people will be able to see it. The picture. Hold on. I think this is going to be good. Let me see. Oh, this is a fabulous picture. How about that? Oh, my God. It's worth the price of admission, everybody. Seth Merrow, he's going to sit in. Dave Groening should be here any minute. Welch is coming. We'll be checking in with Hammer. We've got Caton Bradar coming. Caton Bradar.
It's a full edition.
I'm not done. We got more. Back after this, second half. Twin Spires Weekend Preview live from Gulfstream Park.
At the races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
PA Bread, I think we've built a brand at this point.
The state of Pennsylvania has the best breeders program in the entire United States.
Angel of Empire wins the Arkansas Derby and wins it clear.
Caravel in the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint.
Pennsylvania and the PHBA have the best state bred program in the country, bar none. The best Breeders' Awards and Stallion Awards in the country.
We're racing two-year-olds in California and Kentucky. Please consider Bleeder Shield, the leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action in thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the race. racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner and breeder and stallion owner and developer. It's the best kept secret in racing till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Whether you're new to the racing game or just looking to enhance your operation, Hermitage Farm and Goshen can help you. We are conveniently located between Churchill Downs and Keeneland Racecourse and near world-renowned equine hospitals with spacious paddocks,